and it doesn't warp, it doesn't wear out, and all of those things. But you have to purchase it smartly. You have to be able to utilize purchasing at the right time and then forecasting. You can then make some more money, or you pass those savings along and win projects by being able to have that cheaper material.
Growing a business requires a holistic approach that extends beyond sales and marketing. This approach needs alignment among people, processes, and technologies. So if you're a business owner, operations, or finance leader looking to learn growth strategies from your peers and competitors, you're tuned into the right podcast. Welcome to the WBS Podcast, where scalable growth using business systems is our number one priority. Now, here is your host, Sam Gupta.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the WBS Podcast. I'm Sam Gupta, your host and principal consultant at digital transformation consulting firm Elevate IQ. The metal fabrication industry has several nuances that don't exist in generalized manufacturing. The metal fabrication industry also has unique challenges such as sustainability that increase operational overhead. Finally, the unique manufacturing process and interactions with different stakeholders increase the process complexity. In today's episode, we have our guest, Robert Johnson, who discusses how the metal fabrication industry's manufacturing processes differ from generalized manufacturing. He also provides his insight into the unique challenges associated with the metal fabrication industry and production of cold-formed steel. Finally, he shares some thoughts about the value of LinkedIn and how executives from traditional industries such as metal fabrication can take advantage of LinkedIn. Let me introduce Robert to you. Robert Johnson is a construction executive with 40 plus years of experience in all sectors of construction. Robert has constructed projects totaling $375 million. Robert currently is Director of Manufacturing and Business Development at MAC Prefab. It's MAC Prefab, a cold-formed steel manufacturer and fabricator serving the central and western United States. As a member of ASPE, which is also known as American Society of Professional Estimators, Robert contributes to many peer groups regarding current market trends. With that, let's get to the conversation. Hey, Robert, welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Okay, just to kick things off, do you want to start with your personal story and your current focus?
Absolutely. I have been a part of construction management business development for 40 plus years. Started very young, working in the field, working with my hands, learning every little piece and part, and picking up every little piece and part. And that has developed through estimating and through management, senior management, executive level management, business development. And it has brought me to the place that I'm at today, which is I am all about growing, innovating, being creative, really taking and helping a business get to the next level.
Okay, so that's very interesting because that's the focus of the show. So one of the things that we typically ask all of our guests is going to be your perspective on growth. What does growth mean to you, Robert?
Well, that's very interesting. And I like to put it this way, I'm a more seasoned individual. I'm not on the young side. And it has changed as I've grown. And I guess the right word is matured. So my perspective on growth now is it's on healthy growth. Yeah. There is just going, I've seen so many businesses, been a part of businesses that have been so concerned with growth that quality of work, that price, that profitability all took a shot. And in many cases, some of those businesses don't survive. Many of those businesses don't survive. So it's all been about healthy growth. And I think what I've learned mostly about healthy growth is to be creative and to develop a relationship. The relationship absolutely vital to healthy growth in a business.
Okay. So when you say relationship, what are these relationships? Are these relationships with your stakeholders in your industries? Are these employee relationship, customer relationship, partner relationship? Define what are these relationships?
Yeah, that's very interesting. And again, that has morphed or transformed over time. I used to think that it was just specifically industry-related or trade-related contact, people and relationships, whether it be vendors, which are is very important and can be a vital part of growth and good vendor relationships. But I've even drilled it down into casting a wider net, creating relationships on even the most basic level, from meeting somebody in a convenience store to social media to walking, just any and all of those things. And any of those relationships, I have found many of those relationships can lead to business opportunities, opportunities for growth, whether it be in manpower, skilled manpower, or it be in profitable job, equipment, philosophies, things of that nature. So it's transformed over time, and now it's much more broad. I look for it everywhere I go.
Yeah, so that's a very interesting perspective, and I'm actually going to ask a fun question there, okay? So typically, okay. I mean, you have been in the sales for a long time, and yes. You bring a very different perspective that if you meet somebody in the convenience store, you care for that relationship. So what is your perspective on the cold calls? Because some of the people who get calls from the salespeople, they don't really appreciate them. Do you believe in cold calls? Do you think that you can probably get something out of the cold calls when you get a call from anybody? What's your perspective on that?
This is great because you kind of hit. It's funny that you would really hone in on that. I have done cold calls. I have lived the cold call life. To me, a cold call is almost anti-relationship. To me, relationship is I'll use the example of meeting somebody in a convenience store. I obviously have never met that person before, but we can see, we can make eye contact, we can read body language, we can smile at one another. There's other things that happen before there's any conversation or interaction. That is impossible. Well, I say impossible. In a phone call, a cold call is typically you've never met, you've never talked. And that is not to say that it's not effective. It is very effective in some cases in some industries. But I do know that it is probably one of the biggest pet peeves that people have is being on that receiving end of a cold call. And I'm a very open type of individual, obviously, but there is something that just, it makes the hair stand on the back of my neck. I'm not rude or ugly about it. I feel like we need to have some other conversation first. Let's build up to that introduction, and then let's talk about business at another time. So that's a long answer to your question.
Look, if somebody is cold calling and they are simply trying to sell something directly and not really knowing who they are selling to, then it could be problematic. Right. But cold call could be really fast way of connecting with someone, just introducing yourself and probably meet for a meeting. Would you still appreciate that? Would you not appreciate that? What would be your perspective on that?
No. Now, see, I have a different definition of that. I do that. That is very effective. So, for instance, let's make it industry specific, a customer, a potential customer, a general contractor, a hotel developer that I would love to get some business from. I'll call that individual, just introduce myself and never talk about business or what we do. To me, that's not a cold call. It in fact is, but I mean, in the most basic definition, it is. But to me, that is just simply, hey, buddy, how's it going? I see your work. I love your hotels. I think you do a great job. And if it invariably will lead to, well, hey, thank you very much. I appreciate that they take the guard down. Then they ask the question, well, what is it exactly that you guys do?
Yep.
Then it has turned into a sales call. It is no longer a cold call because now their guard is let down. There's comfort. There is a relationship is beginning to build.
Okay, yeah, definitely interesting perspective. So now let's talk about your metal fabrication industry. So obviously we need to talk about the nuances of that.
Sure.
Current state, especially with COVID. So tell me a little bit of how the metal fabrication industry works. What are some of the supply chain challenges, issues at this point of time because of COVID?
Sure. You know, I can honestly say that COVID has really had a minimal impact on us at a local level. Obviously, a greater level of that is where we source materials from, et cetera, which I'll get to in a second. But my background in the cold form steel market began as a framer, somebody that worked in the field and actually put the pieces and parts together, went to a material supply store and purchased studs in various lengths, et cetera, and then installed those components, fabricated them on a job, et cetera. Where I think that the industry has gone, and maybe one of the nuances with it now is, and I'll get into more about the differences in where I think the wood and the steel are, et cetera. But the labor force over the last several years, as we've gone through generation and generation, the younger generations now want to work in tech. They want to, you know, do IT. They want to work with computers. They don't want to work with their hands anymore. Very few. And so we have a, for the lack of a better term, we have a dumbing down of the labor force. And so to combat that in the construction industry, of course, technology has to come into that. And so where we've gone with the cold form steel industry, and where I think it is ultimately going to go permanently, is the purchasing of coils, slip coils, steel coils, and then actually having the roll forming machines and fabricating that in a shop, the ability to use the software and the and all of those pieces and parts to fabricate walls in a controlled environment where the quality control was way up. And you ultimately wind up with a better product that gets sent out to the field. And somebody with very little knowledge can assemble parts and come up with a very safe and effective way to build.
Okay. So as you are suggesting that there have been a lot of changes, you know, in the industry, it's not as manual as it used to be. So I don't know if you have any background in utilizing any systems, let's say for estimation, and also the processes that are being changed. Obviously, when you move to the larger industry or larger companies, they use far more sophisticated ERP systems to maintain their process. And you also made a comment that some of the businesses don't survive. And I would guess that those are probably smaller businesses. So tell me your perspective overall on growth and how and what kind of role these systems play in the growth. And do you see any challenges with that?
Sure. And you're right on. And unfortunately, I think the reason it affects the smaller businesses more often is less capital, less ability to purchase or step up and go take that technology to another level or use those tools. I can tell you that it makes it so much easier, you know, in utilizing estimation software, on-screen takeoff, plan grid, things like that, where you build models within the system. And then it's a matter of again, for lack of a better term, dumbing it down to where some people can learn. All they have to do is scale drawings, for instance, and choose the right wall model. And it has all the components in there, the clips, the pieces, the screws, the shots, the pins, all of those things that make up that system and come up with a much more accurate way of estimating. That takes that, being able to have that technology and integrating it then with designers and our CAD guys that we utilize FrameCAD. FrameCAD has an excellent software. We also utilize MyTech and their software in building trusses. And it actually does a lot of the engineering for you. Yeah. So it tells you whether your components are going to pass or fail. And we can model and build all of those things that then ultimately go to a structural engineer and get that takeoff. We even tie in laying out in the field with tools that, you know, are for layout are using lasers and GPS. And we have people in the field checking construction conditions in real time, putting them on a tablet. That information gets to a designer real time. It's happening all live. And so that when the components are put out into the field, they arrive right. All of that is just making construction a much more exact science and a much, much better product. Unfortunately, the smaller businesses struggle because some of those systems can be costly.
Yeah, definitely. So let's talk about the overall industry and the processes a little bit more. So let's say if we compare this with the generalized manufacturing, you know, metal fabrication, especially the space you are in, it's fairly unique. And sometimes it could be, let's say, construction or manufacturing. If you look at the traditional manufacturing, then these guys are going to have products that are going to have, let's say, bills of materials or BOM. And then they have fairly standardized process in terms of building these products, right? Because that could, that could be done on the shop floor. But in your case, it's going to be slightly different because you have your production floor, you need to build this, and then you need to do a lot of field visit. So you are going to have a bunch of process, the inventory, the financials involved there. So tell me the nuances of metal fabrication industry and how it differs from the generalized manufacturing.
Okay, this is the best way, and I may be way off base here, but in the general, let's just stick to general manufacturing of and how it would pertain to our my particular industry, cold form steel, which would be mass producing cold form steel products, studs, floor joists, things of that nature, the pieces, the actual pieces, and that's produced or manufactured at a mass volume level. It's just one right after another. It's just taking and printing studs at different lengths and bundling and sending.
Yeah.
Where the difference is in ours is it's basically the same process, except our technology takes and cuts and punches holes and drills holes and does all these different pieces in that same piece as it's being manufactured, which then goes and it's being printed on the inkjet printers are printing on each component and what the job name, what the wall number is, all those things that are then having to be taken to another place, as you've rightfully pointed out, and or another place in a shop and assembled. And then from assembly standpoint, having to be moved throughout a shop, whether it has coatings or surfaces applied to it, ultimately loaded on a truck, and then logistics and how to get it to the job site. So there are components about it that are basically standard manufacturing, but the tweak in there is what it does with the pieces and parts automatically, and then the manual piece of having to put it together. So it differs quite significantly. But I think it has evolved to a much better place than just standard manufacturing. There is a place for standard manufacturing because people are always going to just build it by the piece. But yeah, it's a higher, much more advanced form of manufacturing is the best way for me to say it.
Okay, so let's talk about some other aspects of the manufacturing process. So let's say, you know, if we talk about costing and scheduling. So in this particular case, do you see in your industry that the costing is fairly sophisticated of the product cost? Do you track at the machine level, at the process level? Do you account for labor? How is costing done in your industry?
Well, it is absolutely cost driven. And as you know, steel is a commodity. So right now, steel prices are very volatile. So it all boils down to that piece of steel that comes in a slip coil to us. So it may be 3,000 pounds of steel, but right now we're seeing over the next 60 days, there will be, we've already been instructed by our steel suppliers, we're expecting a 30% increase over the next 60 days in steel pricing. So we have to be there's modeling. We have to utilize modeling, be very sophisticated to purchase steel, much like you would try to buy stocks, buy it when it hits below and hold on to it. Again, it's capital, and that can take up a lot of capital that can, if you're not busy enough, going to sit in a warehouse somewhere and take up space until you can use it. But in doing that, the joy in this is where it's exciting to me is that differences in wood. We've been a wood world for so long, and you can store mass quantities of steel coils. You can put enough steel coil to build a 2,500 square foot home in a bedroom in your house, and it doesn't warp, it doesn't wear out, and all of those things. But you have to purchase it smartly. You have to be able to utilize purchasing at the right time, and then forecasting. You can then make some more money, or you pass those savings along and win projects by being able to have that cheaper material. But yeah, that really is where it is. Of course, the labor, all the labor and pieces and parts, that all pretty much stays the same, but ours is strictly really majority driven on the cost of cold form steel itself.
Okay, so that's very interesting. And that would probably add to some of the logistics challenges because you are basically tapping into the price of your commodity. You need to buy in stock. So I don't know if you buy this and store at a, let's say, at a 3PL, or do you simply sign the agreement so that they can deliver whenever you need? So how's that purchase process? Can you touch a bit on that?
Yeah. So we actually do it a couple of different ways. We will either purchase it outright and it will come to us, or because and coil steel comes in varying width. It comes to us when we get it. It comes to us on a 6-inch to 10-inch width. But it, in actuality, when it's delivered, when you people, maybe many people have seen it going down the road on the highway. It's one single big coil of steel in the middle of a massive truck. They're four or five feet wide. So we have suppliers that we can purchase those that they will keep them in stock in their yard, in their warehouse, for instance, until we need it to be slit and then brought to us, or the other pieces that we just buy it slit and we store it ourselves. But we have a couple of different things. But it, I guess so, in some cases, it's as you described. It's we sign a purchase order. We bought it. We don't see it. It's in your warehouse somewhere until we need it. But we have it at that price that we agreed upon at the time of purchase.
Okay, so this is a very interesting perspective again, because you know, you are probably locking your cash down in your inventory, and obviously you have been in this industry for a very long time, so maybe you can predict the price of a steel. But I have seen, especially, I mean, my family is in manufacturing, right? And we mm-hmm. lost a lot of money just because they could not forecast how the price of commodity is going to be.
Oh, exactly.
So do you typically lose a lot of money? What's, you know, how accurate are your predictions, and what do you do to hedge the risk there?
Well, thankfully, it's not very volatile. So steel that we purchased 30 days ago, you know, at a certain price is, although it may go up 30% over the next 60 days, it's going to take a great deal of time for it to go back to the level of that we purchased it at previously. So the chances of us purchasing something and then it wind up going the other direction, where we're holding steel now that we've bought it at that increased value and now the market's down and we have to get rid of more expensive steel,
yeah,
doesn't happen, because A, we're busy enough that steel that we purchase is typically getting run through our shop quick. So we actually are on the other side of it. Although we try, and it sounds fantastic, it makes us sound very intelligent when I say, oh, we buy steel when it's super cheap and we don't buy it when it's expensive. Unfortunately, it doesn't always work that way. So we are going to be purchasing steel when it's at that 30% increase. When that gets to be the case, then you're buying only what you need for a project at that time. And hopefully you don't have a lot of that on stock when the prices turn around. And they ultimately do. They just, you know, it's very cyclical. Wood recently went through it. Wood was up in the middle of 2020, was up over 100% at some place. People couldn't get wood. It made projects go away. They no longer penciled. So, yeah, it's interesting. Thankfully, steel has not been that volatile, but it's like playing the stock. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose.
Exactly. And that's a great analogy, because you are saying that, you know, you are never going to have to, let's say, get rid of the steel because you are using it. But at the same time, if you compare this with the stock market, you are probably losing money on that steel if you are tracking your cost accurately, right? Because you have one, you have the expensive steel in the stock. So I don't know if your product prices are going to come down because now the steel is cheaper in the market. And then you have your cost of storage as well. So I don't know how much you track that, but there is definitely going to be some loss there, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and whether that loss, where it comes out is that we will pass along those cost increases to an owner, a general contractor, or our customer. We will try to intelligently forecast and let them know ahead of time, just like our vendor does us.
Yeah.
But like, for instance, right now we've got several big projects that are getting very close, and we're informing our customers, hey, listen, if you want to save potentially 30%, let's get your steel purchased right now. So, but ultimately, you're right. The labor pretty much stays the same, although with labor rates being increased now, minimum wage, so forth, labor is fairly, I mean, it's always the same. And we're always competitively bidding, which makes it also extremely difficult. So, yeah, there's times when you can't make money off your steel like you might typically be able to. Sometimes the steel is getting passed through at cost just to get a project. So you're correct. Sometimes you do, in quotation marks, lose some money on it. Yeah.
But okay, so you brought an interesting point that you at least have some cushion that, you know, you are able to sign these agreements with your vendors, but at the same time, you are also signing these agreements with your customer. So basically, they are going to take the hit, which is, that's the nature of the industry, right? Because
exactly.
If you want to utilize the prices, then they have to lock themselves up to be able to has that. So you are in a good position there as a middleman that you are at least able to pass on some of that risk.
Yeah, sometimes it's an excellent closing tool.
Yeah, so let's talk about the sustainability. You know, you had some comments about and you do a lot of work in the sustainability. And your industry, sustainability could be equally important too, because now we are building the house here, right? And then we are utilizing that steel there. So obviously, we need to make sure that the lives are protected, right? So how do you, number one, ensure the quality? And number two, how do you ensure the sustainability issue in your industry?
Well, it's very interesting. One of the things when I talk about sustainability is, of course, the fact that cold form steel is 100% manufactured with recycled materials, and which is fantastic. The safety aspects alone in building a facility, a home, or whatever out of cold form steel as opposed to wood greatly offsets any potential cost increase in material. But an analogy or an example that I like to tell people is it will take typically, if we take in the example of a 2,000 to 2,500 square foot home, it takes approximately 40 trees in lumber to build that home. It takes the equivalent weight in steel of 3 cars. So as far as what we're doing for the future, what we're doing for our children, to making the jump to cold form steel, just the product alone, just is so much wiser. But there is a cost increase. We have found that it's ultimately maybe 0.92% when you factor in reduced insurance costs and things of that nature. But yeah, it's much safer, you know, all the way around. And so we love the saleability of the sustainability of steel.
Okay, so tell me, the market penetration and market receptiveness, obviously, as you mentioned, if there is going to be a cost increase, and cost is always a factor when we think about the environment, but we need to be conscious of the environment as well. So when you talk to your customers, how are they receiving this? Are they able to sell, let's say, their homes at a higher price just because that is going to be slightly more environmentally friendly? Because somebody has to bear that cost, right? I mean... I don't know if everybody is going to take a share of it. So tell me how market receives it. Are there any other value prop of the cold formed, or is it simply going to be more from the sustainability and environment perspective?
Well, it's very interesting. What I find, and this is the unfortunate part, and I think this is changing with time, but the majority of our customers care about the cost. What's this going to cost? Period. And they don't even... And again, it's changing, but many of them, the sustainability and those benefits aren't as important as being able, because most of our customers are general contractors. And those general contractors are bidding against other general contractors. So it's all about cost. So what we have done, and really we have which sounds very grand, we have this vision of changing the industry. And for years and years and years, builders, general contractors, framers have been able to send drawings to a lumber yard, for instance. And that lumber yard does everything. They do the takeoff. They just basically do the whole thing. They give you a price. Your package gets dropped at your job site, and you have people show up and put it together. Nobody does that for the cold form steel industry. So we want to be that lumber yard for the cold form steel industry. The biggest piece of this is educating our customer. There are so many benefits of builder's risk insurance is much cheaper when you build a facility out of cold form steel as opposed to lumber. Property insurance is so much cheaper. The health and safety of a building made of steel doesn't burn as fast. People can get out of the building quicker. You don't have as much loss of life in many cases. All of those pieces and parts have to, and it's just an education process. And fortunately, some people get it and others just look at the bottom line and that's it. And they look at the bottom line today. They don't look at the fact that they're going to save $60,000 a year in property insurance for the next 10 years,
yeah,
which is going to make up that percentage of increase that you're spending to utilize cold form steel. So it's all about education. And I think some of that is our buyers, our purchasers, our ultimate customers are becoming more environmentally conscious and as the times change. So I think we're getting there. We're just getting there a little bit slower than I would like.
Okay. And do you see from the cost perspective, do you think that in the future, the cost is probably going to be equivalent to wood, just because I don't know if government is paying attention to this, but ideally, as a society, I guess we should be a lot more steel, right? So somebody needs to pay attention to this. Maybe they can introduce a lot more to wood, and then you will be at a much easier place, because end of the day, as society, as human beings, I think we should probably be utilizing steel a lot more than wood.
Yeah. No, it is. It's just, it is. We are getting closer and closer to, again, if you factor in and people understand all of the cost benefits of utilizing cold form steel, not just in the construction of cold form steel, you know, again, it's easier for me to educate or convince a hotel, a developer and owner, somebody that holds on to a building for many years. They own 10, 12 hotels. It's easier for me to convince that gentleman, and he'll pay that, or lady for that matter. He'll pay that premium at the time of construction for quicker ROI, because the construction time is less with cold form steel than it is with wood. So he'll get 2 more months of rentals of all of his hotels or his apartment buildings. So there are all those things. They look at it a bigger picture than when we're dealing with just a general contractor who's competitively bidding against somebody else. And most of the time, it's all about price. So unfortunately, that's just the nature of construction. But I do feel the tide turning, and we are getting there. We're getting many more requests for building homes out of cold form steel than we ever have. So we're getting there.
Okay, amazing. Love it. And I think we are running out of time, and we want to cover the most interesting topic that we really wanted to cover, because I see you as sort of the influencer in your community, in your industry, Robert, because of your LinkedIn presence. So we definitely want to talk a little bit about that, why it is important. Can you touch briefly on that? Why are you so much into LinkedIn?
Okay. Very interesting. And this has really hit me hard this week, because the benefits of what I have been doing for years and years and years are starting to pay off. So it's a long game. It's not a short game. So I have, for years and years and years, I have accepted connections. I've reached out. I've built a large group of connections, of followers, not as great as some, but much greater than I ever imagined, really, for myself. And the content that I post on my personal page is uplifting. I tend to think of it as more as not necessarily inspirational, success-oriented, self-improvement-oriented. And that's on my personal page, and I've done that all along. You see very few posts about what I do for a living on my personal page.
Yep.
That is absolutely 100% relationship driven. This is where the aha moment that I have had over the last several months is that my success is on sales. It's on getting customers. It's on winning bids. It's on that aspect of it. And my LinkedIn philosophy is I like connecting with people that think and feel like I do. So these people that are attracted to the content that I post typically are the kind of person that I'd want to hang out with. Who are you going to have the most success in life, in sales, in business with, but somebody that is in your tribe, somebody that's in your community? So your influence to influence them in sales one way or another is much easier. I've had over the last 2 weeks, I've had probably 6 offline conversations with contacts that I've had with on LinkedIn for a long time, some of which do follow our company page.
Yep.
And I see them on the company side, and what they do lines up with what I do. I had a gentleman that I spoke to this week that reached out to me through LinkedIn that builds bridges, highway bridges, railroad bridges, and they utilize cold form steel for the form. Yeah. And I'm like, I never even thought of it. And they need somebody to build those components. So it's a tremendous opportunity that came about because I posted something inspirational initially, yeah, invited them to look at our company page. They did. And voila, here we are. So that's been my philosophy. And that's kind of where I'm at with and how I use LinkedIn.
Yeah, that's very interesting because, and I don't know what your perception is based on your industry, the way you are seeing. So let's say if you look at your colleagues, peers, other marketers that might be prevalent in your industry, what do you think, are they approaching LinkedIn right? Because 90% of the cases, when I look at them, they are either posting sales content, the pitches, and things that nobody really wants to talk about on LinkedIn. Right. And you are taking very different approach the way LinkedIn is supposed to be. So what is going to be your advice for your peers, for your colleagues that are approaching LinkedIn or that maybe may benefit by utilizing LinkedIn? So tell us your advice on that.
Yeah, well, when it's interesting, my specific advice about my industry, my peers, varies from other people, obviously. And I'll just say this briefly, the HR people, the recruiters, those kind of people and the content they're posting on LinkedIn is spot on if they're talking about their stuff, because people are on LinkedIn looking for a job. That's what they're doing. As far as utilizing LinkedIn as a sales tool, from my peers, from people that do what I do, this isn't it, folks. LinkedIn's not what you do. You don't get on there and just post pictures of your jobs and you want people to use you as a source. That's not, if I post something on my personal page, it's because it looks cool or it's a project that I think people have seen a lot and will identify with, just those kind of things. But I have never in my life looked at my LinkedIn feed and said, oh, and the other thing that they use, I'll finish that thought. I've never looked at it and been like, oh, hey, I need to use those guys. That video of them, holding up a metal stud is interesting. Not at all. But they're going about it. There's other formats and other medias that are better for that. This isn't YouTube. This isn't. So unfortunately, this is a relationship. LinkedIn is a relationship based media platform. And unfortunately, as you well know, many are on there just to see how many followers they can get. That's just some of that's age. Wisdom will come in time.
Yeah. This is a very insightful discussion, Robert. Do you have any last minute closing thoughts?
Yeah. So as I had mentioned, I'm a more seasoned individual and I've seen this process come for a long time. There's a lot of the older folks, the more seasoned labor force that have kicked against technology and have kicked against social media, have kicked against the advancements of all of those things that I've mentioned and what all it can bring to you. It has, for me as a more seasoned individual, has, if you'll embrace it, if you will utilize it, if you will work those advantages, your wisdom that you've gained over all the years that's not related to all of that, combined with the technology and the advancements of technology, will make you a superior individual, a superior salesman, a superior manager, a superior owner, instead of kicking against it and rejecting. So it's all about embracing, and it's opened up a whole new world for me. And I love new tech. I'm constantly looking for new tech and new ways to use it, and machinery and equipment, et cetera. So I guess that's what I would say in this whole thing. If you want to talk about growth, embrace the changes and use the wisdom to make the right decision.
Okay, could not agree more. But my personal takeaway from this conversation is going to be, in business, it's all about relationships.
So absolutely.
Thank you so much, Robert, for your time. This has been amazing.
Well, I've enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
I cannot thank our guests enough for coming on the show, for sharing their knowledge and journey. I always pick up learnings from our guests, and hopefully you learned something new today. If you want to learn more about Robert, head over to macprefab.com. It's macprefab.com. Links and more information will also be available in the show notes. If anything in this podcast resonated with you and your business, you might want to check other related episodes, including the interview with Chris Lukey, who touches on how manufacturers can augment their offerings by adding value-added and Industry 4.0 solutions. Also, the interview with Dave Griffith, where he discusses why manufacturers must look for low-hanging fruits when exploring the path of Industry 4.0. Also, don't forget to subscribe and spread the word among folks with similar backgrounds. If you have any questions or comments about the show, please review and rate us on your favorite podcasting platform or DM me on any social channels. I'll try my best to respond personally and make sure you get help. Thank you, and I hope to catch you on the next episode of the WBS Podcast.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the WBS Podcast. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform so you never miss an episode. For more information on growth strategies for SMBs using ERP and digital transformation, check out our community at wbs.rocks. We'll see you next time.